Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is terrific to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, my guest today needs no introduction. You will have heard his voice a million times. He is perhaps one of the greatest thinkers when it comes to helping new graduates start their career. He is the host of the Dental Head Start Podcast. And of course, I'm referring to David Keir. David, welcome to the program. And thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us today. I'm super excited to be talking with you, mate.
Jesse, it's actually an honor. The Dental Head Start podcast, frankly, wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this podcast. And honestly, I just hope I can give the value of content that you guys produce every week. So thank you for having me.
Mate, the pleasure is all mine. I have listened to goodness knows how many episodes of your podcast over the years, lots and lots and lots of them. And I really want to commend you on the program because I think it is an absolute wonderful service that you provide to help young dentists get a great start in their career. And I guess I wanted to just ask you about the impetus to start a podcast. I know my own impetus for starting a podcast, and we've had lots of conversations offline, but I'm curious, what got you into podcasting? How did you go down that rabbit hole? Because it is quite a rabbit hole.
It sure is a rabbit hole. I'll start by saying the Dental Head Start podcast is what it is because of the team, and definitely our team over the years have made it what it is. I guess I started it as a blog. It was a drive of wanting to help people transition in that difficult time. Our motto is to help dental students and graduates become great dentists. And the reason I wanted to get content out there is I was just a graduate. I didn't know the answers, but at the same time, I'd done quite a lot of dental assisting. And I saw that have a material impact on my first year and my ability to get through difficult situations or to just know a few little tricks that just help you that little bit, right? And so I wanted to share that stuff. And I actually started it with a good friend, Dr. James Zerbalis. It was wanting to help people, wanting to get content out there. So we started writing a few blogs, and it was a bit of fun just creating a website and just getting stuff out there. But I was also, and still am, an absolute avid podcast listener. I can assure you I've listened to more of your podcasts than you've listened to mine. But that's because I actually love the content, you know, dentistry and business. It's a good mix. It actually stemmed also from a dinner I had with my wife. This was a year before graduation. And I was talking about podcasting. I was talking about, there's a space that's not filled in Australia. And she's like, why don't you do it? And I thought it was the most ridiculous thing ever. But it left a mark and I couldn't let it go. And I'm an introvert, but at the same time, I just couldn't not. And I'm very thankful that I went down that path. It's opened a lot of doors.
Introverts finding their way into podcasting. Who knew, right? Anyway, I'm with you there, my friend. So, David, you've got a really interesting story. Obviously, you spent some years, you know, as a student, dental assisting and so on. You started your career as an associate dentist. What is it about starting your career that you think gave you the skills, the knowledge to become, you know, you're a highly regarded dentist? You know, what were the things you learned on that path, and how did that set you up for the future?
A lot of where I am now is who I was exposed to throughout that time. Well, of course, through, you know, undergraduate, like before being a dentist, I was working as an assistant, and those dentists, you know, a special mention to Dr. Robert Target, the person who inspired me into dentistry. You know, just a general dentist doing his thing, but he took me on as an assistant, and that was life-changing, obviously. Through that time, I did a little bit of assisting with Professor Tony Au, Dr. Mark Tuffley in OMFS, worked in a private practice with a great principal dentist who taught me a lot, and then learned from those people around me. You know, for me and my dental education, it was because I guess I was lucky that I genuinely enjoyed what I was doing, and so therefore could spend the time to learn and to focus and to keep going, hence making a podcast, I guess.
Yeah. And a special mention to a mutual friend of ours, Dr. Omid Azami. He had Omid had the, you know, Newbie Dentist podcast there for a while, and if you're listening, Omid, we want to get you back into that groove, mate.
I actually reached out to Omid just before I started as a podcast and said, hey, you know, Omid, I know you're in this space now and I don't want to step on your toes, like, do you mind? And I'll never forget that response, actually. And this is something I've learned a lesson from moment in this. And it was just immediately, absolutely go for it. You know, more the merrier, cup is full, half full kind of attitude. And I just loved that. And then we ended up working together. Frankly, we ended up working with yourself as well, Jesse, and doing some other things for fun. And an inspiring person.
Did you always have it in your mind that you thought, yes, practice ownership is for me? Or were you evaluating and weighing up, you know, am I happy being an associate? What was your journey into practice ownership? Or did you always know that it was going to be your path?
I don't know how unique or not this is, but it's interesting having the opportunity to interview so many people. Many people knew or didn't know for sure dentistry was the answer. They were thinking maybe medicine, maybe dentistry, ended up in dentistry. And most of the people you interview, you know, fell in love with and did well. I wanted to do dentistry. Medicine was totally not an option. It was dentistry or engineering, I guess. I actually started with engineering and transferred towards dentistry, but I knew I wanted to own a practice as well because I had the opportunity as a dental assistant to work in a small practice and saw my employer and good friend, Rob. He was running his own race. He was able to set his hours. He had flexibility and he had respect within the community and a lot of those things. And frankly, having that autonomy was something I gravitated to. And actually at the time, I tried as much as I could to help out in some of the business aspects, even though I was just a late teens, early 20s. So business was always the path, but not at the start. And I do see some people, and I don't know how they do it, but come out of dental school and end up in practice ownership really early. I knew I wanted the foundations to be quite strong. Maybe not perfect, but quite strong before I took that step. And I'm very glad that was my path because I feel competent and I'm still desperately learning so many things from a dental point of view. I couldn't imagine if I was still a graduate. And then also adding the literal full-time job of running the practice as well.
What is it about business that fascinates you? What is it that you think about? What do you kind of get curious about? What is it that you enjoy about it?
I have actually thought about that and thought about like, what do I love about the podcast and then what do I love about practice ownership as well? And I frankly think business is creativity.
Yeah.
And it's a way of expressing that creativity and because you are genuinely creating something. And obviously a podcast is creation of content, but I mean beyond that, like it's a creation of a thing that is functional and continues on beyond you. And I actually find that quite inspiring. And I think the podcast and then CPD Junkie very much as an associate was almost like, it was like, I'll do this because I'm not ready for practice ownership yet. And that worked out really well in that order. And it was a bit of a, I don't know, like an entrepreneurial seizure. Like I just need to create something, do something. And, you know, otherwise I'm going to quit and buy a practice. But yeah, that really worked out well. But it's definitely the creation and the, it's almost an art form in some ways. That'll sound really nerdy, but yeah, it's expressing yourself and then having a bigger impact. And impact is for me a massive part of business and what I do. And I tie the Dental Head Start podcast into giving back as much as I can. I tie our practices into giving back or having an impact. And obviously in healthcare, we're just having an impact as it is. So those things, I gravitate deeply to that.
How has CPD Junkie or Dental Head Start helped you, do you think, in being a practice owner? And there'll be some people going, dang, maybe I need to go and start a podcast so I can run my practice better. Maybe you do. But I'm curious, some of those skills are transferable, right? As some of those lessons you would have learned interviewing people, some of the lessons you learned, you know, building CPD Junkie's website, all those sorts of things. How have those lessons helped and served you as you've entered practice ownership?
Obviously, there's, you know, hundreds of things that cross over. I think the main things, like from the podcast, you know, things you could just imagine is if you've got that ability to listen, to interview someone, it's a really fun skill. It's a little bit selfish. I get the opportunity to just ask people amazing questions and go down that path with them. But frankly, what it teaches you is to listen and to connect with what they're talking about. And that's what we do as a dentist when we're trying to break down some of those barriers and make a connection with our patients. And I definitely think that has had an impact on that side. from a business point of view, lots of things. One of the big things, I said it before, but your team is everything. And obviously, I know that in my practices, without my team, we would be nothing. It goes without saying. But it's very much what I learned from the podcast and CPD Junkie early on. Your team, you can't do it all. You can't even close to do it all. You can't do a quarter of it. So without a good team and without skill sets beyond your own, you can't create the bigger vision that you have. And then the last thing that definitely comes to mind, and something that I think as an early business owner, you almost need to learn the lesson. I'm glad I've learned these lessons in other businesses, but cash flow is king. And well, it's just obvious, right? But at the same time, you've got to learn the lesson. And cash flow is everything. Without cash flow, I've heard you say, Jesse, it's the lifeblood, it's the oxygen, it's, you die without it. And I've definitely in those other businesses, they're micro, right? They're so micro, but at the same time, I thought, oh yeah, glad it's only a couple of grand to keep it going. Yeah. As opposed to a couple of $100,000 to stay afloat.
Yeah. So, mate, we've covered a bit of the professional territory so far. I wanted to switch gear and talk about a few things around your personal life and circumstances. You've got a lovely wife, Juanita. You've got two lovely daughters. And you have a third child who unfortunately passed away, Asha, which is a very sad set of circumstances. And I know a lot of the work you do in terms of impact is giving back to honor his memory. I want to ask you how that's changed you. I want to ask you, obviously it's a terrible situation, but I wanted to ask you, in that sliding doors moment of life, sometimes things come into focus in ways that maybe they haven't in the past. And I'm curious to understand how your view of the world and how your view of your own life shifted.
I appreciate that. And it's something, if anyone's listened to the podcast, my podcast before Dental Head Start, I have shared this, and it's definitely something public because for Juanita and myself, that was a big part of the healing and has helped us continue to move forward. It was a paradigm shift, obviously, in our life. It was a time where, frankly, I was already not burning out, but like functioning at a rate that wasn't sustainable is probably the best way to put it. And then that happened and we lost Asha, and I threw my hands up, as you can imagine most people would, and
of course
wound back dentistry to like 3 days for another 3 months. I really found it hard because I was having that conversation with people all the time, because people knew I was expecting, and I'm a very open person, both podcasts as well as patients. And my wife and daughter and I packed up and got a caravan and took 10 months off and went around Australia. And for me, it's not the first time I've packed up and done something like that. I after my undergrad medical science, I went traveling, did one ski season that turned into three, and met my wife, and that worked out pretty well.
That worked out.
I think I work in like 5 to 7 year bursts. That's how.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
And I do have a vision around our practices and that burst. But it showed, or it emphasized the fact that, there is always so much more to life and I guess balance. And balance can mean a lot of different things to different people. Mm. And for us at the time, that was right. We needed to just take a step back and spend time with our daughter. She was three at the time, and we traveled from 3.5 to about 4.5. Mm-hmm. And then we now have Vila, our baby. She's 14 months now, who's obviously a ray of sunshine. And it was obviously a big experience and thing to go through. Yeah, there's a million different lessons, I guess. One of them is another, emphasizing impact and giving back. And a big part of our healing was to connect ourselves with Humpty Dumpty, which is a charity for neonatal or babies, or basically to get equipment to hospitals that need it. And we've raised, I think, over $30,000 now, and donated a bunch to the podcast and a lot of things on that side of the fence, and that in itself is very healing as well.
So you're obviously grieving, both of you, you and Juanita. You pack up in a caravan, you go traveling for 10 months. Now, traveling around Australia is like that, that's a big trek, right? That's a big, vast, open country out there, right? And you're sitting side by side, confined spaces, and not much opportunity to to kind of have your own private space to process. How did you find being in such close confines with the two ladies at the time, the two ladies in your life? Now, obviously, is the third, but at that time, how did that go, living in such close quarters?
That's a very intuitive question, Jesse, because traveling, like, it sounds idyllic, you know, on the road, you got all the time in the world. It's, you do need your own space. And my wife and I and daughter, we figured that out. And I think going through our experience of losing a child would genuinely break a couple or really strengthen a couple. And I'm very lucky to be on the ladder of that. And Juanita and I are very strong, but we needed our own space and time. And you probably, or people out there can probably gather, I'm a bit of a obsessive type. Like, I do things and I frankly obsess over them. It's usually a bit of a fear of failure, but I think it's more than that. And the reason I say that is I started running, and running was my therapy, but it was also my space. And for my wife, you know, for both of us, it was exercise or going out and doing something for an hour or two on our own pretty much every day, was a real therapy in itself. But then I obviously decided, all right, I can run, so why not do an ultra marathon or two?
Let's not just gloss past that for a second. There's a big difference between going for a casual jog around Cairns or Dubbo or wherever you happen to be, ultra marathon. So that's a mental shift, right? And as you said, there's an obsessive part of your personality potentially. What led you to ultra?
That's a great question that I haven't deeply thought about, but I think I like to challenge myself on things that I'm not sure if I can achieve it or not. There's a bit of a cliche answer for ultra, like, why do you do it? And honestly, I think the answer is, like, it's probably a bit selfish. It's just a bit stupid, really. But if you don't know you can do something and you sign up for it, you've got to really work hard to get there. And that's another thing, I guess, having a goal. Actually, that kind of ties back to everything in life, isn't it? If you have a goal, then you will achieve bigger and greater things. And very much for me and my personal training, I don't know about others out there if they train and do other things, but if I don't have a goal, I just flounder and do hardly any training. And if I have a goal, which now I have a bigger goal, I train very hard and I'm quite committed. So, and it's the same if you have business podcasts, if you have your business goals, you have clear goals that you want to achieve, then you have a good chance of achieving them. If you don't have those goals, you're just not going to get anywhere near that.
Marathon is what, 42 something or other?
Yeah.
So how long is an ultra?
Well, anything above that, it can be 43. My first was 50.
Yeah.
And that was they're all trail runs. So 50 Ks, but it was really rough. Not great trail. And did this with a good friend, a dentist as well. Shout out to Dylan. And then signed up for a 65, and that was the Larapinta Trail in Alice Springs.
Yep.
One of the most beautiful parts of Australia. Absolutely stunning range in the middle of the country. And that was very rocky and obviously a lot of elevation. And I think we did it just under 10 hours. So that shows you're not running particularly fast. You're walking in some sections, but you're getting there consistently over a long period of time.
And I know you've signed up for a 100K run as well, because, 65 is clearly just inadequate. Yeah. oh my God.
But how can you not put the three digits?
I totally get it, right? I understand that. And I'm perhaps not in running sense, but I do silly things just because the number appeals to me or whatever. I understand. But 100K is that's more than two marathons. How do you prepare for that? How do you not just physically prepare, but the mental preparation around that? How do you stay consistent for that period of time? How do you not succumb to the inevitable aches, pains, whatever that's going to come up, and push through? Because I think there's something in here about just putting one foot in front of the other and pushing through irrespective of the pain. And I'm just wanting to explore that theme.
Yeah, I resonate with what you're asking. I'm definitely not the person to ask about the answer. I'm probably about to find out. It's like trying to run a marathon on a treadmill, the most boring thing you'll ever do in your life. But at least trail, it's exciting to go. You're exploring, you're seeing new things. And usually, often you kind of tee up with someone or whatever. But yeah, you're right. It's not the physical, because you do the training for the physical. It's really the mental game. And I think the mental game is relevant to anything we do, any, sporting endeavor or whatever it is. It's just about consistent and not wavering or not falling off the bandwagon, I guess. And it's interesting because, speaking of the mental game, this is a bit of a tangent, doesn't answer your question perfectly, but I was exposed to the mental game or the mental aspects of the performance things through poker. I played a fair bit of online poker before when I traveled and in between my 2 degrees. It's a big part of that because you can very easily lose something where you thought you were going to win, but remember it's just a percentage chance, right? So you can lose that 1%er like 5 times in a row and that can send your mental game right off. And the ability to recognize that the decision was correct and you just need, you know, continue on the path and, you know, this too shall pass kind of concept. It was really good learning I got out of that, and definitely it's a little bit of a stretch, but in some ways it's the same. It's about keeping a level head despite the ups and downs. And they're inevitable, but yeah.
Is consistency part of your nature, Dave? Because I've known you now for some years and I have always admired your ability to get things done. Is consistency part of the DNA of David? Or is it something you learned?
I am forever trying to figure out how to get things done. I think we all are. You know, one of my questions at one of our masterminds was, how is everyone like, get things done? And it's funny you say that because I feel like I can hardly get things done, but I guess it depends on what you put on your plate. this is a strange story, but my daughter and I have been doing this little gem art thing where you put these little gems on the sticky pad in the right numbers and and I really enjoy it. So that's a public admission, more than she does perhaps. Perhaps there's a little bit of that consistency in my DNA, but it's interesting because when you reflect on yourself, yeah, I wouldn't say the same, but maybe that's because of my standards. So I'm not sure, to be honest.
It's interesting, isn't it? I play a bit of tennis and I enjoy the practice. I enjoy just hitting ball after ball after ball. And someone said to me, don't you get kind of bored hitting the same shot over and over and over? And it's like, actually, no, I just quite enjoy it. And I wonder whether it's easy to be consistent when you're enjoying something, a bit harder when you're not. Obviously, you don't enjoy every element of every run or every tennis game or every bit of work. But I think if you're enjoying it more than you're not, perhaps that's a factor. I wonder.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. If you enjoy something, you can continue to focus, because in the end, consistency is an ability to focus for a long period of time, and that's not always easy if you're not into what you're doing.
Yeah. So coming back to the trip around Australia, so there's the three of you in the caravan. You're traveling great distances, vast roads ahead of you, and I imagine at points there's like conversation, and then at points there's silence. What did you think about, what did you learn about yourself in those moments of reflection and silence?
Very good question. I think one thing I will say as a bit of a caveat, but it's interesting how you can travel around for 10 months and, you know, not have a job, but still fill your time. So I know that sounds just like a random comment, but it's interesting how we were, in many ways I reflect and think, how were we still so on the go? But then again, you know, we traveled 40,000 Ks. So we were physically on the go quite a lot. One of the things I will say, so there's a lot you learn about yourself in that type of travel. There's a lot you learn about yourself just in everyday work. And if you reflect for long enough, but it was interesting going into that process, thinking a year off, oh, I want another year after, if you know what I mean, and never want to come back. For me, that's not how I experienced it. I think needed the therapy that is a time away initially, and it was great. It was healing. It was then, you know, enjoyable, of course, and it was adventure, and I love adventure. But I was definitely at some point, probably about halfway, missing something. I realized that I was definitely coming back, and I was beginning to get more and more excited about that concept. And that's something I learned about myself, is that the taking that time away truly recharged me. And it's interesting because I think back, and this is just my personal story, but I traveled before going into dentistry. So after undergrad, before dentistry as a postgrad, and I traveled, I just partied, I guess, and snowboarded. And I was so ready to come back. I was motivated. I enjoyed it. There was a massive helping of fear of failure, but I then did very well. And I think I did well because I had that time to kind of breathe before and then do the sprint. And again, thinking about my own journey, has come up before, but it seems like that works well for me. And so that's exactly how I felt about our time away, knowing that then, okay, we need the next thing. It's definitely real. We explored quite a few different possibilities and landed on, you know, a small practice in regional New South Wales, which is close. I still live in Port Macquarie, which is where I've been for 8 years now. It's where Asher was born and rests. And obviously it's a very special place. I wouldn't go anywhere else in Australia, and I've been around, if you know what I mean. Mm. And we were fortunate enough to find a practice that I could kind of slot into and serve the community and build. And now we've got the second practice and able to therefore employ some graduates and bring on OHTs and just do that growth thing that you need energy for. And frankly, that's what I got from my time away. I'm ready for the next 5 years.
It's funny that you say that. And when I came back to Canberra, having sold our first practice, then came back, and the fellow that we bought our practice from, Canberra's a pretty small world. The person who bought our first practice was the associate dentist at the practice that we ended up buying when we came back. But I had a chat to Ray, is his name, really nice guy, and he's been a mentor to me directly and indirectly for some time. And when we were coming back, he asked why you're coming back, Jesse, basically. And I was telling him that in the first practice, I'd kind of followed the wrong path, the traditional dogma of the time, and ended up creating a highly stressful job for myself that was kind of never ending and the burnout, stressed out, all that sort of stuff. And so in that state, I made the decision to exit that practice. And his comment to me, and it resonates with me to this day, is he'd been down that path as well. And instead of selling his practice, he'd taken a sabbatical for a year. And as he said, he put a locum in. The business made no money, probably lost a bit of money, but he needed that little bit of break so he could come back and have another go. And I think there's something in that, David. I think having that circuit break that you had after the death of Asher, as Ray had when he was going through whatever he was going through, I'm not sure of the intricacies of that. And certainly when I was going through what I was going through, I didn't have the foresight to take that break. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably a bit of a strategy that people listening to this podcast could take something from and go, you know, if you feel like life is getting too much, irrespective of the circumstances, obviously, you know, there's degrees, having the ability to step away for a while is really valuable. And you mentioned to me you're working in 5 year set or 5 to 7 year cycles. So is that a serious comment, or is that like a glib comment about the 5 to 7 year cycles? And if so, what does that look like in your mind at the moment in terms of breaks, recharging, all those sorts of things?
Yeah, it's actually a serious comment. When we were in Western Australia 2022, we moved pretty quick through Western Australia, and it's an amazing place. Obviously, it's very big. So we moved quick and didn't really see as much as we wanted to. And we're in Exmouth. Exmouth, the diving over there is the most incredible place and thing. The whole place is just amazing. But we were thinking, obviously, at the time we're with, you know, my wife and daughter, but imagine doing that with a group of friends. And so at the time I said to my close group of friends, you know, in 5 years, because it takes that long to plan something like that, let's go and do that. Let's do a 3 month trip. I'm deadly serious. So I have a 5 year plan to be able to take a trip. And that trip for me looks like about 3 months or something. It's not a year or anything like that.
Sure.
And I'm not selling any practices. But at the same time, I do have a vision of being stable enough to be able to step away and manage from a distance without, you know, going backwards, if you know what I mean. So yeah, it's very, very serious. I want to touch on something because you mentioned, you know, having that circuit breaker is something that, you know, you resonate with, and something that you have taught me and the Practice Max community. You talk about week 13. Mm. And I repeatedly coin it weekend 13 because I've got two young daughters and two practices and a week's just not viable. And I actually really like that. But the concept, and you can expand on it, but the concept being more working on your projects or working on your business or whatever, but it's also for yourself, go and do the activity or be in a nice place or whatever. And I see that as a recharge concept. And I like the fact that you talk about planning it and setting it as an important part of your quarter. And yeah, you can probably go and expand on that.
Yeah, no, thank you, mate. Week 13, I thought I'd come up with, honestly, I thought I'd had this epiphany. I thought I'd had this brainwave. No one else has thought of this, you know, until I read that Bill Gates had been doing it for like 100 years or, and a whole heap of other people, right? So I was late to the party, even though I thought I was there early. But the concept really is, as you said, it's pretty simple. It is a recharge strategy in 52 weeks of the year. So each quarter, the 13th week or thereabouts, is a week that I go away. And it's interesting, Dave, because I'm an introvert. I like to say I'm an introvert in an extrovert's role. And I recharge by actually getting away. And I recharge by having time to myself. I've got friends who are extroverts and they recharge by being around people. And that's amazing and wonderful for them. But I find that when I do that for a period of time, I just need to kind of pull the shutters, close the doors and kind of, you know, tuck myself away for a while. So I go down to a little seaside town south of Sydney called Kiama. It's pretty. It's got great cafes. I love coffee. So I tend to go down there. And for the first few days, it's sleep and rest and catch up. But I guess the reason I'm telling you that, the interesting thing that happens is when I'm tired, when I'm stressed or whatever, my creativity tends to dry up. Mm-hmm. I'm just busy kind of, you know, getting through what I've got to get through and don't have the opportunity to have expansive thinking. And so after a few days of just walking along the beach, having a cup of coffee, watching the waves roll in, all of a sudden my mind, it's like a sponge that's rehydrating. It's quite interesting. And then by the end of the week, I've got a notepad full of ideas. I come back to the team and they all kind of brace. He's coming back on Monday. Yeah. Look out. But it's good.
I resonate with all of that, the whole concept. And I don't know how you speak on stage as an introvert and extrovert's job, because I can speak one-on-one and then 1,000 people listen to it. I don't mind. Don't know how you do what you do on stage, but the recharge and the ideas that come through that ability to allow yourself to think. I also find, personally, I find it in exercise, a lot of ideas come. I'm often listening to things when riding or running or whatever. And it allows you to have those thoughts and be creative, because that was what we talked about at the start. Business is creativity and a joy in expressing that.
I come from a family that's musical, and for some genetic reason that just bypassed me altogether. I have precisely no musical talent at all. I can play the stereo and that's about it, right? And so I've got you know musical family everywhere around me, and I'm tone deaf, which is why you'll never really hear me sing. And I remember feeling, it was my father actually who's probably of the family the most significant muso. I said to him, I felt really a bit disappointed that whole creative gene had bypassed me. And it was him that actually said to me, "You don't get it, do you?" Oh, what do you mean? He goes, "Your creative outlet is what you do with your business. That's your canvas that you're painting. That's what you're creating in your mind's eye and trying to turn into reality. It's no different to composing a picture or a photo or composing the music or whatever. You're composing that." Mm. And I quite like that metaphor, and it makes me feel like I have agency in it as well.
Can I just make a point? You might not be musical, but you can dance. I've seen you do the hot potato on stage. That was pretty good.
That was for a good cause too.
Yeah.
speaking of good causes, that was for Greg Page's Heart of the Nation. Mm. Get your AED registered, ladies and gentlemen.
Very, very good cause, and we went out and did it because of that. And Southwest Rocks has an AED accessible because of that. So thank you.
No, that's Greg. We just need to thank Greg for that. I think out of every adversity, hopefully something good comes. Even if it does mean I'm dancing on stage and looking like a total lunatic. But anyway, we won't dwell on that, because there is an expression that old guys shouldn't dance, and I think there's probably something true about that. Anyway, my hips never moved, and they move even less now. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, David, you've been in your practice now for a little while, a bit over a year and whatnot now. What have you enjoyed most about owning a practice?
I honestly love it. And I know that sounds crazy, but then again, on this podcast, it might not. I really do love it, but it is also, so much work. I love the autonomy that comes with it, the flexibility. Yep. I can obviously work pretty hard at the moment, but I can work when I need to work and I can take the flexibility I need. I can use what I want. I can care for my patients in the way and the workflow that I choose. I can, you know, obviously choose and train my team. We talked about creativity and the way you express that. It's really just implementation of business and systems. And I have really enjoyed that. I must admit, there's a bigger list on the challenges side that, you know, everyone, before you start, you hear people say that and then you start and you realize what they meant. And by no means would that ever deter me in any way, but it's a big canvas to paint.
Yeah.
It's decades worth of canvas to paint. And so you're not going to create that vision overnight. Even if you are, you know, my experiences in other businesses, half of it translates and then half of it doesn't. My experience in being closely involved in practices from the other side, it's still... Yeah, your own journey is going to be a long and windy journey, and that's okay too.
I was having a coffee this morning actually with one of our clients who's down in Canberra for a hockey tournament actually, and we're talking about, you know, building a business of substance really is like it's a multi-year project, right? It's not something that you kind of just go, hey, you know, I've got the quick guide to practice success.
I do have that guide through Practice Max and Savvy, and it's still like, oh damn, it's not.
Yeah. Well, it's quicker. It's much quicker, but there's still some time in there, right? So I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you about that is in terms of things that accelerate progress. You're a really smart guy, mate, and you've got a really sharp business mind, and I can say that openly, freely, because I've had the opportunity to work with you in lots of different capacities, and we've had lots of really fun and stimulating conversations. For people listening to the program and thinking, well, you know, I want to try and accelerate my progress, what have you learned that has been a force multiplier for you as you've gone through your own business journey? Because you have gotten off to a pretty rapid start, mate, which is impressive. And kudos to you and to Juanita. What are the specific things you've done, whether it's a particular team member or a particular strategy? What's been the go?
There's a lot. I think one of the things I'll fall back to, like the first step, there's so many steps, but is a clear vision. And everyone talks about that and it sounds like a bit fluffy. Clear vision and values and like a purpose. So Dental Head Start's purpose is to help dental students and graduates become great dentists. I've said it so many times that my brain turns off when I say it, like as in it just flows, right? Because that is how I make decisions for that podcast. If it's going to help dental students and graduates, then yes. So for example, choosing a sponsor, do they help students? That's why Practice Max. You know, we wouldn't have that. It's not a sponsor that fits, no. If you know what I mean. But then other things are. And so it just makes business easier and decisions easier. And so from, you know, your practice, you need to know what's your purpose, what are you trying to do, what's your like core. And that steps down into your values. And we're pretty firm or very firm on the value of connection for us. That's a really big thing, connecting with our patients, connecting with our team, connecting with our community. It's about connection. And again, that helps you make decisions. But obviously then there's so many more layers to that. And one of the big force multipliers for me has been Juanita, my wife, taking on certain aspects. Things that originally I had more experience with because I've done these other businesses. And Juanita's a teacher by training, but she was then a trusted person I could hand things off to. And then having a really great practice manager, Stacey. And Stacey came with a lot of experience and a lot of drive and has really been the implementer. And there's a book, I don't remember it to be honest off the top of my head, but the concept around having like a visionary and an implementer and very much like needing... Like action is what actually makes the change, right? You can have a vision, but you need to then implement that, and having great people around you to do that. I was also very fortunate to have a really great DA join me early on. So when, frankly, I started implants 18 months ago and I didn't have to think about the DA side of implants because she knew it. And frankly, she probably knew the clinical better than me at the time. And that was just a huge weight off my shoulders. So I guess what you're hearing me say there is team.
People, yeah.
people. Having people and people with skills that are different to your own and being clear about those roles and going from there. Now, of course, I guess I hear you say these things and I appreciate it and I'm very grateful for the words you use. I want to reflect in 5 years and make sure that it's all true. But it's one of those things where there's so much more that I don't yet know. And I guess also hungry. I've had a rest, so I'm ready to grow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's layers upon layers upon layers of understanding that goes with this. Yeah. One of our clients who's been with us 10 years now, he says, you know, I think I'm just starting to get it, mate. And and it's not like he's like
I
this guy's.
I totally get that. I just totally get that. I've listened to too much of your content, to be honest. And each time you pick up new things and I just totally understand that. And here I am now trying to implement and it's like, all right, I'm just on level one.
Yeah, and I think it's just going to be bite-sized. Yeah, you're like, work on one thing, complete it, do the next thing, complete it, rather than trying to do 10 things at once and end up, you know, feeling like you're overwhelmed and, you know, stretched in 100 different directions.
Can I make a point on that actually? And this is more for graduates or early stage dentists. It's if you say you just graduated, you're 6 months out and you're thinking, now I want to do ortho. That's fine. Like, obviously, if you're interested in that, passionate, then I think feed that passion. But you're not going to get as much out of the big course at the moment if you haven't got those fundamentals down, because you're going to be learning just the very basic fundamentals. You're going to be just surface skimming. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying be aware of that and then perhaps do the course twice or at least digest the content twice. Or if you know what I mean, it's the layers come with time, experience and knowledge.
Do you remember Gordon Christensen when he was around lecturing a lot? I had the good fortune to listen to him speak a couple of times, and on both of those occasions he made the point of when he was trying to get better at dentistry, this is clinical dentistry, he'd choose one discipline each year and go deep just on that one thing. So rather than trying to learn ortho, bit of implants, bit of endo, bit of this, bit of that, where you're surface skimming, he'd kind of just choose one discipline and go as deep as he can. And I think there's actually some merit to that as well. And it's the same in business. Choose one discipline. You know, I'm going to really learn marketing really well this year, or I'm going to learn team structures really well this year, or whatever it is. Of course, you can't ignore all the others, but to focus a bit more on one or the other.
Can I ask a question about that? Because I love the concept and I actually really like that concept and would recommend that to graduates or, you know, younger stage dentists, focus on certain things, pick your one, two or three things. The problem in many ways with business is that you're pulled in 10 different directions at all times and they're all important now. How do you define which to focus on? How do you go about that?
Okay, so, this is big, like this is a 2-day podcast just on that one topic.
We've got time.
We do. But I'm going to share a couple of things with you, and I'm going to probably challenge the preface of the question. And I'm going to challenge by saying perhaps not everything is as important as we think it is. There's a really interesting book by Reid Hoffman, who is the founder of LinkedIn. And the book is called Blitzscaling, for anyone that's interested. In that, he talks about letting some fires burn and deliberately going, I know that part of my business is ugly. I know that there's a problem there, but for the moment, my focus is going over here. And for me to do what I need to do over here, I need to let that fire burn for a little while. Now, of course, you don't want that fire to burn and get out of control and burn the whole business down. So you do enough to kind of keep it under control, but you focus your energy and efforts in those areas that are going to have the biggest impact. So that's always been the approach that I've tried to take more recently. But when I was younger, less experienced, and this is what led to me burning out perhaps, is I was trying to do everything all at once because I felt that they were all important. And I understand that feeling. I have walked many miles in those shoes. I've just had to learn to avert my gaze from the mess that I'm leaving over there and going, okay, my marketing is a bit crappy at the moment, but I've got to sort my team out or whatever the situation may be.
Isn't it funny how you talk about it and we all know it? Dentistry attracts perfectionists, but business doesn't really isn't made for perfectionists. So maybe that's the difference.
I think perfectionism is a two-edged sword, right? As dentists, perfectionism helps us achieve really good clinical outcomes that we're proud of and we feel like we're delivering great patient results. But the downside of perfectionism is that it means that you just don't have the bandwidth to go broader. It means that there's often a case of diminishing returns as well. So chasing that last 1 or 2%, you know, and taking ages to get it. And I think in business, you're absolutely right. It doesn't lend itself to perfectionism. And yeah, I heard an expression a little while ago, and that is, you know, 80% done by someone else is 100% effing awesome. Yeah. And I try to live by that.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good concept, because in the end, it's all about your team.
Yeah. So, David, I want to round out our conversation firstly by saying thank you for being so generous with your time, but just as importantly, perhaps even more importantly, being so generous of yourself. And I appreciate you sharing your life lessons as much as your business lessons, because I think actually business and life are intertwined and you can't really separate them. And, you know, I think that sometimes we talk about balance and, you know, it's all like we've got this beautiful life wheel. And I use a life wheel to illustrate purposes, but, you know, it's a giant smushy mess of everything in together rather than these beautiful siloed areas of our life. Here's my health and fitness. Here's my, here's my relationships. Here's this. It's all kind of one big life. And so I want to say thank you for sharing the elements of your life that really have been formative in who you are and continue to, you know, shape your journey as you move forward. If you were in my shoes, and you have been in my shoes many times on your own podcast, wanting to wrap up a conversation, what's the one question that I should have asked you that I haven't asked you?
Well, I'm not sure if there's anything specific to me, but I always round a podcast out by asking, what would you tell every graduating dentist if you could get in the ear of every single one? It's funny because I don't have a perfect answer to that. I think that's how most of my...
Maybe we needed to rehearse that bit a little bit more, mate.
maybe. Because there's just too many lessons, I guess. For me, my journey, I don't think I've done anything special. I've just been passionate and willing to dive in, I guess. That's perhaps part of it. And maybe the lesson that I want to share, and it's not a huge lesson, but I've said before, I'm an introvert. Like I still get nervous before a podcast. I've done hundreds and I'm just sitting here having a chat with people I enjoy, but it's just something about it. That's just me, right? But at the same time, if I didn't do the podcast, I wouldn't know you. I wouldn't know hundreds of different people that I've met and mentors and friends and connections and opportunities. And so taking that first step, like being willing to dive over the edge, not being sure of what's below is sometimes necessary. Now, I guess you could extrapolate that into situations that aren't really appropriate. But at the same time, if you're willing to put in the work, sometimes you just need to take that big step.
Yeah. Well, I actually think that's a really good way to round out. But before we do, I just want to take a moment to say thank you for the work that you do for the profession, David. You've been serving the profession for a long time now with the Dental Head Start podcast and all that you do. And I have spoken to countless people who listen to your podcast and say how it's helped them, you know, get the start in their career that they've wanted, how it's helped them find their passion in a particular discipline of dentistry, how some of them fell back in love with their chosen career after they might have had some doubts about it. So I think the work that you're doing, mate, is absolutely vital and really pivotal for the profession. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that and say thank you for the work that you do, mate. It's really important work, and please keep going with it, because you're doing a great job, buddy.
Thank you, Jesse. I'm very grateful for that. And it genuinely wouldn't be around, I don't think, without you and your podcast and the inspiration you've given me. So thank you. And I'll continue to be a listener of this podcast for a long time.
As I will be of yours, my friend.
Cheers.
Anyway, mate, let's call it a day at that. But thank you once again. Give my best to Juanita and the girls and look forward to talking to you soon, mate.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.